Welcome to the Sports Resort, your home for all things sports, with your hosts G Money,
Tay,
Padre T,
and Connor. Let's get to it. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the Sports Resort. This is your home for all things sports. I'm your host, Gannon Cornley, along with my co-host, Toby Todd. I want to welcome you guys to another edition of the best sports podcast in the world. I've had a couple weeks off, but we are back to get you guys all up to date on all the sports action that we have missed and have yet to have a chance to talk to you guys about. Very full episode ahead of us. First of all, we got to talk about what's going on in the World Cup right now. USA, I think, all in all, made us proud. Unfortunately, they are not still in it, but we will talk about that. Got some NFL to get you guys updated on, as it was another wild weekend in the National Football League. I, after some shocking news today about the Tennessee Titans firing their general manager while currently sitting at 7-5, first place in their division, have a rant. So you guys stay tuned for that. As people who love to piss me off and or hear me talk angry, just wait, because you're in for it. And then we will quickly move from that over to college football, as we now have the four teams that will be making the college football playoff. We may get into some Heisman talk as well. But all of that and so much more on this edition of the Sports Resort. So without further ado, Toby, let's get to it.
Perfect.
All right. So World Cup, man, it was finally here. A lot of anticipation, a lot of controversy, to say the least, for where the World Cup was being played, why it was being played there, and the scheduling all behind it. But nonetheless, we were able to put all of that beside us, and we were able just to get on the field, get the teams there, and play the games. And, man, this has not disappointed. I can tell you this, to get things started, I can't talk about the World Cup and any disappointment without mentioning the host country as Qatar. Not only did they not make it out of the group stage, but a whopping 0 points in their group, taking 3 losses. It was a true embarrassment. The only team in the World Cup to be that bad, not advance, lose their first game in the World Cup on top of that. Just all first time for just straight losing for Qatar. Just no good. But for us here in the United States, our team was able to finish second in our group, edging out Iran and Wales, England taking the top spot in Group B. Argentina and Poland advanced from Group C, sending Mexico, USA's big-time, long-time rival, home. Some other noteworthy things that went on in the group stage. In Group E, it was Japan outlasting Spain and Germany to win their group, and Germany actually was sent home as they finished third behind Spain. So Japan and Spain advanced in Group E. It was another shocker in Group F with Morocco, a team that not very many had advancing. They won the entire group. Croatia finishing second, sending a very disappointing Belgium side home, with Canada finishing out that group. And then the teams that have looked the strongest, you had France winning their group, as well as Brazil, the respective winning groups of D and G. And then it was the Cristiano Ronaldo and company in Group H, with Portugal easily moving on. So that kind of set the stage for a majority of our, you know, the teams we expected to move on did advance, but obviously some shockers with Belgium, Germany, teams of that nature going home, potentially even Mexico going home early. But that led us into the quarterfinals, which I'll let Toby kind of talk about what we've recently just seen as the quarterfinals wrapped up today.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of upsets. Actually, you know, no team in the World Cup went perfect through the group stage. There was always some sort of letdown, slip up, whether it was France and Brazil playing their B teams for the third game. We didn't see any of that in the quarterfinals, all right. In my opinion, and this, you could argue Morocco over Spain was an upset. In my opinion, the favorites in every game advanced. As unfortunate as it is, especially for us here as Americans, we were so excited. They gave us the first game of the knockout round. And it was fun for the first 9 minutes. We were better than Netherlands. We were better for the first 9 minutes. And that's the fun stopped after that. And I think it looked big picture for USA, right? Big picture. You didn't make the last World Cup. You advanced. You made it out of your group in this World Cup. But to allow 3 goals, never good, especially for allowing 0 open play goals in the group stage. I did not expect Netherlands to come out, put up 3. But in the knockout round, the favorites did advance. Argentina got the job done against Australia. France, dominant. Mbappe solidifying himself as best player in the world over Poland. England cruised by Senegal. Croatia-Japan, this was a fantastic game. Went to PKs. I think this had all the drama that you'd want out of a game. And then we saw Japan take what I thought were going to be the worst penalty kicks in the World Cup that day, as they lost 3-1 on PKs, going 1-for-4. And we saw, I think, the best individual team performance of the World Cup in Brazil against South Korea. Brazil goes up 4-0 at halftime, ends up winning 4-1. And then today, it actually can't get worse, all right? I can guarantee you guys this. These were the worst penalties in the World Cup. Spain, Morocco played with a scoreless draw. Spain doesn't even score in penalty kicks. It went to penalty kicks, and Spain somehow never found the back of the net. Morocco advances, caught by the keeper. Happy for the whole continent of Africa, as this is only the fourth time that an African team has advanced to the quarterfinal round. And then I'm glad you added the and company when discussing Portugal. And as sad as it's going to make our friend Connor Reed, the Portuguese side without Ronaldo put on an absolute show. Goncalo Ramos probably just earned
him. Their backs are hurting. Their backs are hurting. They're carrying Ronaldo.
Well, the whole team outside of Ronaldo played flawless today. You even had a 39-year-old guy scoring goals for them. Portugal did today. Dominated Switzerland 6-1. And I think if you're looking at like the big takeaways from the knockout rounds that we didn't quite see in the group stage rounds, it's that the favorites are who we thought they were. To quote the great Dennis Green, they are who we thought they were. And us underdogs, Americans included, we let them off the hook. And it does set up a great quarterfinal. I'm not going to lie, as a soccer fan, because we're still calling it soccer here. I'm not changing. I don't care if we lost to a European team. It's still soccer to me. It does set up some great,
Memphis.
It sets up some great quarterfinal matchups. But, you know, all in all, you'd rather see the USA here. But I'll let you talk about these quarterfinals, because these are some juicy games right here.
Yeah, no, they are. And you know what's insane? Because I kind of have the bracket on my schedule pulled up. And for some reason, ESPN feels necessary to tell us what match number each game is under. So the quarterfinals, the first game on this upcoming Friday at 1 p.m. Central Time, it's Netherlands versus Argentina. So my guy Messi is up first. And then, they play it, the 1 p.m. game, the 9 a.m. game. They have it backwards for some reason. Brazil and Croatia play at 9 a.m., excuse me. But they are match number 57. Argentina and Netherlands is match 58, which is actually insane that we're going to be, after this weekend, have played 60 games, which is pretty unreal. But those two games are on Friday, and then on Saturday, the 9 a.m. game is Portugal and Morocco. And then at 1 p.m., we have France and England. I'm extremely excited. You're going to have a very defensive, at least I thought, Netherlands team. I really hoped USA would win, but I thought that would be like a 1-0-ish type of game. It ended up being 3-1. But normally I feel like Netherlands are, you know, very sound defensively. So I feel like it's going to be a very defensive matchup, and them trying to stop any attacks from Argentina's side led by Lionel Messi. But hey, obviously, based on the USA game, Netherlands shows that they can attack, they can counterattack as best as anybody. So that's going to be a very, I feel like, up and down game. Croatia Brazil is going to be a very tactical game. I just don't think Croatia has enough firepower to match with Brazil. I think it could be a 0-0 game at half, and all of a sudden that game end like 3-1, maybe 3-2, maybe 4-2, something like that. I just don't think Croatia has enough firepower. Brazil is just firing on all cylinders. And then to the Saturday games, Portugal-Morocco. I know Portugal scored a whole lot in this game. I mean, Switzerland, they already kind of looked iffy. I mean, it was quite literally down to like the last few minutes for them to even get through to this point. So I think Portugal is in for a different type of matchup with Morocco. I expect Portugal to win, but I don't think they score nearly as many as 6 goals in this game. I could take a 2-1 victory there. We'll see if Ronaldo starts. Came off the bench today. That was pretty controversial. Connor nearly cried. I felt the tears on the phone. So that was pretty funny. And then to round off the quarterfinals, it's England and France. And, you know, that might be an actual football score. We may legitimately see like a 7-6 game in that. I mean, there's just some, as they say in football, there are some world class finishers in that game. So that's going to be whoever's defense just doesn't give up. Just so many goals may win that game, because I could easily see that being the highest scoring game. Well, actually, Switzerland, I think, made sure that we saw the highest scoring game today. But outside of that game, on a more competitive level, the highest scoring between two teams. So I think that's going to be good. Ultimately, I'll let Toby kind of give who he thinks is going to. I think we're close to agreeing, but I have France and Brazil in my final. I think that those have been the two best teams. As of right now, I can't even pick a winner. I may need a couple more games because they're that neck and neck for me. Sadly enough, I think for half of our group being kind of Messi fans, the other half being Ronaldo, I think both of them go out in the semifinals. So we will maybe get to see a pretty cool third place matchup for two of the best ever. But as of right now, I think France and Brazil show to be two best teams in the world.
Yeah, and I agree that Brazil and France are the top two teams in the world. But the way tournaments work out, it very rarely comes down to the actual two best teams. I've been a huge fan of Brazil this tournament. They don't concede any goals. They did with the B team at the end against Cameroon, and they did against South Korea after they went up 4-0. So they don't concede. They play such a fun style. Brazil for me has to make the final. I think they're the most entertaining watch. I think they have the most depth at all spots. For me, they're making the final, but I'm actually going to go with England. All right, and I think this would be completely different if Karim Benzema was running at the center backs of John Stones and Harry Maguire in that matchup. And I get Mbappe, look, best player in the world. Like I said, the guy's going to break the World Cup goal-scoring record. I think we all agree on that. But very rarely do the two top teams actually meet. And I just think because so many people are high on France, they will blow it. At some point in this tournament, I think they will. They're going to come up short. There's a lot of firepower on their side. I get that. And France obviously being the head honchos of all the firepower on that side. But there's just something about it coming home to England. It's just if the Americans couldn't beat them, I don't know who will, you know. We live in 1776. We played to a stalemate this time. Who's gonna beat them? You know. So I'm actually gonna go England. Also, Connor pissed me off. That's a huge disclaimer. Connor said this is France's to lose. I said, did you even watch Brazil? Called them inconsistent. I said, okay, buddy. So he, a little behind the scenes of why I'm picking England to beat France this Saturday. A little bit there, but. Yeah, you know, just to be different, and this is a good England team too. I mean, this a team you can't sleep on. They scored the most goals in the group stage rounds. They put up 3 against the Senegal team that was very impressive in the group stage. So, This is not an England team to be taken lightly. I don't think France is just going to walk in there and run away with this game. So as long as they can keep Mbappe in check, I think that England can win this game and advance.
Oh, for sure. No, definitely they have a shot in this for sure. That's why I quite honestly think this could be the highest scoring game between both sides, all things considered. I mean, this could be a 4-3 type of game.
I'm almost nervous because of how good the forwards are on each side. Because of how good the forwards are, that we're going to get a lot of midfielders kind of just planting themselves, and they're not going to push forward. The backs aren't going to push forward quite as much as they normally would against some of these teams who they're clearly superior than. So, like, Declan Rice, like a Jude Bellingham who play for England and can move forward, I think they're just going to – I think they might play it safe, might really slow down the pace of this game. Mm-hmm. But as a fan, I want to see them say, nah, screw that and screw this defense. We need goals to win. We know they're going to get some and just go all out right from the start. And if that happens, it probably will be the highest scoring game. Yeah, because these dudes are – these forwards are insane. And I don't like England's back line nearly as much as I just hyped them up to be going to the final. So,
yeah, no, I'm excited. You know, this has been all in all, like I said when I, you know, introduced the topic, where as much controversy and, you know, all the nonsense that played in the – you know, before these teams were able to get to Qatar and actually play this tournament, it's been overall very entertaining. Lots of upsets. I mean, this is what people like. I mean, you know, I know here in America, soccer is obviously not that popular sport, but if there's going to be something that's in this sport that's comparable to, you know, what I think America's maybe favored, at least tournament is the NCAA tournament. I mean, this has been close. Some heavy favorites going down. There's a kind of some Cinderella stories, and then now you kind of still have the top dogs, the blue bloods, still a lot of them in the mix, and that's ultimately what people still like to see. So, you know, I think even if you're not a huge soccer fan, if you even remotely pay attention, you have to be pretty excited for what's on the horizon. And we finally have, you know, Ronaldo and Messi both, even though in limited roles for some other than others, their teams are moving forward in the World Cup, something we haven't really seen. It's been kind of one or the other kind of advancing. So they're both here. This is probably their both last World Cup. So it would be a dream matchup to see them play in the final. I just think it's a little far-fetched right now, but we'll see. Anything can happen. So never know. Croatia in the last World Cup, no one ever saw them making it all the way. So yeah, I think all eight teams are here for a reason, and you know, we'll be here to cover it. So, again, the Friday matchups are Brazil-Croatia, Netherlands-Argentina, and then Saturday we have Portugal-Morocco and France and England to round out our Elite Eight, if you will, heading into the quarterfinals. So that'll do it for the World Cup. Now we will transition now over to the NFL. Rough weekend for us here in Kansas City. Rough weekend to be a Titans fan. You know, it's just a rough life in general to be a Broncos fan. And, you know, the Vikings fan in Connor came out a little bit after they won their game. So he was the only one that caught a victory this weekend. So, but yeah, no, a wild weekend that it was. You know, just kind of looking at where we're at currently within the standings. If the playoffs were to end today, right now the Buffalo Bills would be the number one seed in the AFC at 9-3. Kansas City Chiefs at 9-3 as well at the 2 seed. The Baltimore Ravens currently still lead the AFC North. And then you got the Tennessee Titans at 7-5 leading the South. At 5, you have the Cincinnati Bengals at 8-4. They're just behind due to their tiebreaker, their head-to-head loss against the Ravens. Miami is also sitting at 8-4 in the 6th seed. They're behind Cincinnati just because they lost head-to-head. And then you have the Jets as of right now, rounding out the 7th seed for the top 7 teams in the AFC. Obviously, the New England Patriots, Los Angeles Chargers in the running. in a far, far distance, you have the Raiders, Browns, and Steelers. Don't believe any of those will make the playoffs, but they are still somewhat not mathematically eliminated. And then in the NFC, you have the Eagles at 11-1, still in that top spot in the NFC. The Vikings at 10-2, directly behind them. The 49ers at 8-4. Is there, you know, still a game ahead of the Seattle Seahawks? So they are leading the NFC West. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers getting a big time Monday Night Football win last night. They are now up to 500 at 6-6. You have the Dallas Cowboys at the 5 seed at 5. The New York Giants at 7-4-1 after their weekend tie with the Washington Commanders. That was a very weird game there. And then you have the Seattle Seahawks holding on to that 7th spot at 7-5. As they are just ahead of the Washington Commanders, who are 7-5-1. So, and then I don't really know if you really want to call them in the hunt. The Detroit Lions at 5-7. Atlanta technically is not; they're in the running only because they can theoretically win their division. They can already get all the way up to the 4th seed, even though they're 5-8. And then the Green Bay Packers are also 5-8. So. Lots to be played. I think the drama is starting to pretty much settle in the NFC. I think we have the 8 teams that realistically can make the playoffs. It's just pretty much a race between Seattle and Washington. I think the other teams are pretty much going to get in at this point. But in the AFC, I'm not so sure that, you know, the Jets are the 6th seed, but New England, Los Angeles, and honestly, the Las Vegas Raiders, are it's not out of the question for them to make a run here. Toby, who do you think maybe a dark horse that's not currently in the playoffs that you think maybe you had to sneak in?
Well, if I had a dark horse that's going to sneak in, and honestly, I think could do some damage. I'm looking at the Washington Commanders, actually, and I don't really think it would even be sneaking in. This tie is what's holding them back. They actually have the exact same record as the Seahawks. Commanders haven't gone on bye yet, so maybe the Seahawks tie and they – catch the same record, but it wouldn't really be sneaking in for me if the Commanders somehow end up passing the Giants. I think this is a team that they play with sort of this moxie under Taylor Heineke that they don't have otherwise. For whatever reason, the guys rally around him. The defense plays better. The offense plays better. I think Ron Rivera is a good head coach, and I think if they were to get into the playoffs, this would be a very, very tough team for some of these teams to play against, especially if they do end up getting the 7th seed and the Vikings, who always seem to play close games, go up against Washington. They've shown a propensity for keeping games close and being able to win those close games during this late stretch here. So for me, I think the Commanders actually are going to end up making the playoffs. The Chargers are certainly a team you watch in the AFC. The Chargers have all this talent. What are they going to put together? Does Brandon Staley get it right? Does he eventually start getting things right? They have too much talent to continue missing the playoffs. I'm mad for the Chargers, and I'm a Chiefs fan, but they have too much talent to keep missing, and it feels like the Jets don't have enough talent to hang on. But for whatever reason, I don't believe in either one of those two teams, and I also don't believe in the Patriots or the Raiders. I don't believe in these. All right, teams that I don't believe in, but one of them will end up falling into that spot, or they will promptly get their butts whooped by the Bills, Chiefs, whoever it is, Bills, Chiefs, Bengals, whoever gets the 2 seed. So for me, I'm looking at the Commanders more as a team who can sneak in and actually do something once they're there. And I think for me, the playoff race now gets really, really interesting because of some events that happened this week with division leaders that might change the trajectory of the playoffs entirely. That comes between two very similar teams, the 8-4 49ers and the 8-4 Ravens, both of whom had quarterback injuries this week, both of whom are very, very good defensive teams who are going to be playing with backups for what, in the Ravens' case, appears to be 1 to 3 weeks. In the 49ers' case, will be their third-string quarterback for the rest of the season. And the trajectory could change big time because there's two teams right behind them that are playing well. They've got really good quarterback play right now, and they believe that they can win, and that's huge. So I'm looking at the AFC North and the NFC West races as we go down the stretch here as being probably the two most exciting in football. I get the AFC East is great. The AFC East is a great division. The thing is, I think the Bills are a very complete team, and I think they will, by the time the season's over, have beaten the Dolphins once more, kind of pulled away. But this AFC North and the NFC West races just became super fun. And unbelievably fun. And I can't wait to see how those play out.
Yeah. And on that, too, to the AFCs, what a totally missed opportunity by the Dolphins. I mean, Jimmy G goes out fairly early, and they lose that game. Like, that's a game you got to have. The Niners are on their third-string quarterback, and I know, too, eventually he got hurt in this game, I think. I don't think he made out of there healthy. But that is a totally missed opportunity there, because they would be 9-3 along with the Chiefs and the Bills had they won that game, and they would be very much in the running for the number one seed. And now they find themselves all the way down to the sixth seed. So that was a massive, massive loss for the Dolphins. And, I mean, for a team that's done so great, but I think a team that hasn't necessarily convinced everyone yet that they are on the level of the Chiefs and Bills, kind of show their true colors there. That is a big time loss when they, all things considered, when they really have a chance to, you know, sneak into a one seed, get the overall bye, as well as win their division. So I thought that was a huge loss on the NFC side. I mean, it's right now, it's a three team race for the most impressive. I mean, you got the Eagles who just annihilate the Titans, the Vikings, close win, but they found a way to get it done, and then the Cowboys, man. Listen, I cannot stand that team more than anything, but 54 points. I mean, the Colts are horrible, and I'll be the first to tell you that. I'll tell you that for free. You know, I ain't got no problem telling you the Colts are horrible, and they have a fake coach. But those are professionals, man. 54 points. Oh, my goodness. Like, that is unbelievable. Like, that game on Christmas Eve between the Cowboys and the Eagles, man, that's going to be some good stuff. That's going to be some good stuff. In Jerry World, I'm pretty fired up for that game. So, I cannot wait for that. If that doesn't get you fired up, nothing will. I can tell you this. I don't know if Toby has anything else left on this NFL topic before I get pretty fired up and heated. It's now time for my Gannon rant of the day. But anything else that you have before we kind of close it on this NFL sector?
The only other thing I want to say, and we keep talking about this team, even though we should not be talking about this team, but our co-host is gone. The race between Russell Wilson passing touchdowns and his bathrooms.
Oh,
that
was my final thought.
Oh, this race is unreal. This race is the fact that the bathrooms have a chance at week 13.
Russell Wilson has more bathrooms in his house than he does touchdown passes this season.
You know, the first year that we played fantasy football as a group, we actually, for everybody back there, I know this is really dumb and we're kind of outing ourselves. We actually drafted the Friday after the opening game. So everybody knew what the Broncos players had. Monte drafted a bunch of Broncos that year. Peyton Manning had 7 touchdown passes the first game of that season. Russell Wilson, as a Bronco, has 7 touchdowns in the first 13 weeks of the NFL season. So I just, you know, as a Broncos hater and as a friend of Monte, I felt it necessary for me to bring this up, but I'm sorry. I stole the final thought. You're gonna have to, you know, have more thoughts, I guess, during the rest of this episode.
more final thoughts.
I would have just been remiss had we let this NFL section slide. The bathrooms, and it's starting to become a movement, no pun intended, that this has caused, and I couldn't be happier about it, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, it's pure entertainment. This is just too good. But all right, I'm sure you guys have been waiting for what I have to say on this John Robinson firing. Shocking news in the NFL today. Tennessee Titans general manager John Robinson gets fired. Absolutely blown away. I can't believe it. And let me tell you this. I'm beyond shocked. I originally was pretty upset, and maybe my tone expresses that. But I'm going to talk like I'm Mike Vrabel for a minute here. You trade away the team's best player from a season ago, and you watched him torch your ass on Sunday. I believe that this was an absolute power move by Mike Vrabel. I think he went to the owner and gave her an ultimatum. It is me or him. There has already been rumors about potentially after Ohio State's second in a row loss to Michigan that Ryan Day potentially could be out down the road and that they would be looking for Mike Vrabel to replace them. So I think Mike Vrabel went to our owner and essentially told her, either you give me full control over this team or I'm leaving for Ohio State. And that's what it sounds like. Because shortly after John Robinson was fired, it was announced that Mike Vrabel will gain complete control of the team and decisions, therefore, moving forward. So Mike Vrabel is going to be able to hire essentially his own boss. He's going to get to hire the general manager. And I, as a Titans fan, while still shook that the man that got us essentially three divisional wins in a row now, about to go to the playoffs for four out of the last 5 years, John Robinson has done an excellent job in his 7 years of taking over the Tennessee Titans. He got this from being a poverty franchise. They were like 5-27 or something before he got there over the last like two or three seasons. 5-20 something before he took over. And immediately they were competing for division titles, got to an AFC championship game under John Robinson. And I thank him for everything that he did. But the A.J. Brown trade is unforgivable. The drafting of Isaiah Wilson, who no longer plays in the NFL, drafted him 2 seasons ago. Caleb Farley might be the worst cornerback in the entire NFL. He is god-awful and never stays healthy. He is piss poor and a horrible miss on John Robinson's part. Dylan Raidens was a second-round draft pick we took as a left tackle. He is unplayable. Unplayable. Our offensive line is so bad, he can't even get in. He can't play on an offensive line. That's unforgivable. Vic Beasley. Jadeveon Clowney. Julio Jones. And I was all for the Julio Jones. Three gigantic swings, three gigantic misses. You know, I'm not mad at him for trying. But he went out there, gave a lot of money to those guys who contributed nothing. Julio Jones, one total touchdown as a Tennessee Titan. Vic Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney had as many sacks as me and Toby combined in their tenure as a Tennessee Titan. Unforgivable. And then continuing on the nonsense that is Todd Downing as offensive coordinator and not firing him. And he is still hired to this day, even after driving drunk. I can't believe it. So it's funny to me that the national media and everyone else on ESPN is now like, why would the Titans fire their GM while first place in their division and after, you know, they're going to make the playoffs? Because if you read what Amy Adams Strunk, the owner of the Tennessee Titans, said, she is sick of being a good team and wants to be a great team. And I am not kidding. I thought going into work this morning, I listen to Titans podcast every morning, I felt like the ownership of this team did not care about the team. They were fine with being a fun team that made the playoffs and didn't truly want to compete. Because if you watch that game against the Eagles, we had no chance. No chance. You could give us the greatest coaches in the world. That roster is not built to beat a team like that. No chance. She said, "We are tired of being good. We are ready to be great." And as a Tennessee Titans fan, I am fired up that at least our owner seems to care, because I didn't believe it less than 24 hours ago. So that is my rant. Anyone that's destroying the Titans for firing their GM, this is the same team that fired our head coach after we won a playoff game. And we got Mike Vrabel. He was the reigning coach of the year. So I'm fired up. That's my two cents on it. I was very confused and didn't really like it at first. But then Amy Adams Strunk's message to the city of Nashville. Gotta love it. And we're building a brand new stadium. It's going to be the nicest stadium in the league. Gonna love it. Toby's speechless.
I mean, things are looking up for the Titans. You didn't tell us today that you had changed your mind on the thing, so I thought you were going to come in here angry. I wasn't expecting you to be motivational and being all, gung-ho over the Titans situation. But, I mean, it's perfect. You know, if you're excited about your team, that makes one of us going forward. So that's pretty cool. the news was surprising, especially for it to come midseason. You know, you're in what now is the final month of the regular season in the NFL. But it's a move that once you kind of laid out, these are like some of the shortcomings we've had. From an outsider's perspective, we've noticed the draft problems. Everybody talked about the wide receiver problems. A lot of people have talked about the O-line problems, not as much as I have with my friend who's a Colts fan or a Bears fan. But we knew the problems were there. We knew it was an imperfect roster. We know that there's been a lot of injuries to said roster as well. But you have to do something to change the trajectory of your franchise if you feel like it's not going the direction you want. And sometimes you get hits, David Long Jr.'s and such. Sometimes you get misses, Julio Jones's and such. And you got to live with both. I'm excited to see where it takes the Titans in the future. This is a team that, bright future ahead still. They've got young pieces who I think are going to get better. Treylon Burks, to me, looks like he could be something in this league after a pretty slow start, you would say, to his career, a hurt start to his career. But I think things are looking up in Nashville. And, yeah, definitely get a new stadium, my guy. I saw this stuff this offseason about the stadium, man. Get yourself a new one of those, because, hey. I mean, it's about to crumble right on top of the field. As if you guys don't have enough injury problems. You don't need the fans out there getting hurt that old stadium.
We're going to have the most substituted fans now.
You guys in Washington, you guys are in a dead heat for that.
We're renting fans. So, yeah, no, there's going to be – I forget how much. It's like a $4 or $5 billion stadium coming. So that's supposed to be set to break ground in 2026, I believe.
So even better, an out-of-state Titans fan who's not going to have to pay anything on it.
Yeah, that don't affect me none. And I don't plan to move there. So, no, that don't affect me none. Run it up, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, go for a shoot for $10 billion, Nashville.
Shoot, as much as they charge for drinks in that city, shoot, that'll pay for half the stadium right there.
Yeah. Oh, pretty soon you guys are just going to be co-owned by every country music star in the business.
This is everything's gonna be sponsored. And the 10-yard line that the Titans just crossed is sponsored to you by Tim McGraw.
However you gotta pay for it, my guy. Yes, sir.
Yeah. That's enough Titans talk, but I had to get that out because that was the biggest breaking news within the NFL today. And pretty PO'd. And then I thought about it from Mike Vrabel's perspective. He's tired of coaching a team that has nothing. So that'll be that. But on to some teams that have something going for them. Looking up, what I'd say, as the Titans are, how about the college football playoff? We have our four teams now. It is Georgia, Michigan, TCU, and Ohio State. They have made it quite a bit of drama, especially within our group over the weekend about who was going to get in, who was going to get left out. None of that could have been possible without the utter collapse of USC losing to Utah on last Friday night. I have 47-24 butt whipping the Utah Utes put on USC, destroying the Trojans' college football playoff hopes. It was a 17-all game at halftime, and it finished 47-24. I don't think I've seen a team crumble so quickly in such a and such a large, like just on a, such a large stage that bad, where you're tied at half and you lose by almost 30. That was an incredible performance by Utah in that second half, which stirred up a lot of controversy, because then it was, all right, USC pretty much is out. Ohio State, they were 5. They're looking to move up to 4. Then we have number 3, undefeated TCU going up against K-State. If they lose, does number 6, Alabama, move in? Lots of back and forth within our group about it. Ultimately, K-State does defeat TCU, which could have been the game of the year as far as I'm concerned. That was an incredible game. K-State prevails in overtime, winning such a thriller. Despite TCU's loss, though, they were able to hang on to the 3 seed. And the reason why they are in the 3 seed is because Georgia and Michigan take care of business. Georgia hangs 50 on LSU, while Michigan runs away with the Big Ten championship in the second half over the Purdue Boilermakers. So the top 2 teams remain unbeaten and take care of business as they are the top 2 seeds now moving in. Are you surprised by any of these weekend's results, or is this kind of what you thought was going to happen?
And honestly, all kind of went according to plan, in my opinion. Look, Utah's a horrible matchup for USC. And as soon as we actually have to go back to the last weekend of the regular season, where Caleb Williams is hitting the Heisman pose on Notre Dame. He's out there. He's feeling himself. USC's feeling great. They're going to get the 4 seed ahead of Ohio because Ohio's just been embarrassed. The problem was everything that Utah needed to fall into place to go to this game happened. They needed Oregon to lose to Oregon State. Oregon blows a 21-point lead. They needed Washington to beat Washington State in the Apple Cup. Washington, of course, the better team, does beat Washington State. UCLA had to win their own game. They won easily. And all of a sudden, this tiebreaker sets up the worst possible matchup for USC, the only team that USC lost to this year. So USC, 2 losses on the year to 1 team, the Utah Utes. Just a horrible matchup. They out-physicaled them. USC can't tackle it all. And the thing for me, the only thing that I think we really got into it, there was a large discussion in our group this week, was about these conference championship games being played between teams who are on the fringe of getting in. And these games can only serve to hurt. Because let's be real, Georgia and Michigan were not going to lose this week. It's just they were too good for the opponents they were playing. They were not going to lose. TCU and USC were playing games this week that could only serve to hurt them. And luckily, TCU didn't let Kansas State run away with it. K-State actually got up 11 in that game before TCU sent it to overtime. And I think because TCU didn't let them run away with it, Alabama had no case to get in. But USC fans are probably feeling right now like we played an extra game against a team that's just a horrible matchup for us, the only team that's beat us this year. We had to replay them again. And the team who last week lost by 23 at home to their biggest rival gets to sit on the couch and prosper from us potentially losing. And of course, it comes to fruition. You look that bad, of course. You can't really feel too upset about it. Just one of those things in the system that works out really funny, because you don't do away with conference championship games. Everybody loves those. And in the near future, when expansion happens, these games are going to be unbelievably necessary, because that's going to be automatic bids, and you're going to want to play in those games. Those games are going to mean a lot, and they serve to help as much as they would serve to hurt in that scenario. But you could only get hurt. if you played this game and lost, if you were USC. If you didn't play it at all, you were in. And the committee said they were in over Ohio going into the week. And it kind of played out the way that I thought it would, because Ohio State is just kind of one of those. Ohio State and Alabama, they're just those two institutions that things just seem to like go right for in college football. You know, when they need teams to lose for them, they lose. They can get away with losing games that other programs really haven't been able to get away with losing throughout the course of the college football playoff. And you just had a feeling going into it that something was going to happen. I actually thought K-State was the better team than TCU when they played in the regular season. I thought K-State was the better team than TCU when they played in the Big 12, so I wasn't shocked by that result either. And at the end of the day, I think when you consider the system that we have, and, you know, there's some of it's flawed, I just thank the committee that they kept TCU at 3, because I think they did earn their way in. And I'm ultimately, I guess, happy with the way the college football playoff turned out. If it was going to be USC getting thumped, knocks them out, I think they did get it right in the end.
Yeah, I mean, over the course of the season, I mean, pretty much Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU have been at the top for the most part. So, I mean, I know USC, it took them literally to the last week of the season to get to that 4 spot to even be in for the first time. So they were kind of the anomaly. And of course that was also as a result of Ohio State losing to Michigan. So yeah, in the end, I mean, you got the teams that had pretty much been in the top, you know, 5 or 6, and now TCU finally got to move up into that playoff spot toward the end of the season, but pretty much Georgia, Michigan, and Ohio State had been there all year long. So yeah, in the end, I think they did get it right. But I was firmly on the side, like, if TCU looked bad at any point, like, because I still do firmly believe that Alabama would give a better contest than TCU would against any opponent, whether it be Georgia or Michigan. But in the end, I mean, you have TCU's only loss is in overtime by 3 points in an extra game. Kind of hard to penalize them for that. So they deserve to be in. Ohio State, while they did not look impressive against Michigan, they go 11-1 over the season. I mean, really, who are you putting in over that at that point? So I think they did get it right. Makes it very interesting and obviously gives the potential for a rematch between Ohio State and Michigan. Obviously, Ohio State will have to go through Georgia. But we've got 2 Big Ten teams in. We usually used to seeing 2 SEC teams. Got that in there, and then we have a Big 12 team, something I feel like we haven't seen in a little bit. So that'll be fun. The matchups are going to be very interesting. I'll say we're bring their offense, because that's going to be they could be in for a rude awakening, because Georgia's defense is on a different level. But no, I'm pretty excited for these games to come, which leads me to, you know, ask you. If you obviously we have some New Year's Six bowls and we have just our regular bowl games announced, what are you most excited, or what game are you most excited for within the New Year's Six, and then just regular bowl outside of that?
Yeah, so for me, everybody knows that I'm a huge K-State fan too. I cheer for all the local teams. You know, I'm KC through and through, and so K-State playing Alabama in the Sugar Bowl is huge. But I want to pivot, because I've been talking about K-State all the time on this podcast, and I come on this podcast, and if you didn't know that I was a Michigan fan, you would think that I was the biggest K-State fan because of how often I've talked about him beating Texas and being better than TCU and doing all this, that, and the other. So I'm actually going to go to the Orange Bowl, which is a very interesting matchup between the Tennessee Volunteers and the Clemson Tigers. One team who I think overachieved this year, the Tennessee Volunteers. I don't know if we've ever seen them this good. People who are old enough to watch Peyton Manning in college probably have. But as long as I can remember, I don't remember Tennessee being this talented. And this Clemson team, who they thought they were just going to, you know, coast through the ACC and make the college football playoff and, you know, feel real good about themselves. Once again, kind of hit a few roadblocks, still end up winning the ACC, the weakest of the Power 5 conferences. But the reason that I'm interested in this game, not only is it very fitting that these two Orange Titans are meeting in the Orange Bowl, But this is a glimpse into the future, and this is something that we get a lot in bowl games with opt-outs, things of that nature. But Hendon Hooker's hurt for Tennessee. Joe Milton, their backup, is on a less grand scale, sort of a Spencer Rattler type story, where this guy has immense talent. Coming into college, he was supposed to be the next big thing. He had to transfer out of his school after he lost his job. But he's somewhere where he can excel. And he's going to get the reins for this game against a good defense, which is going to be fun. On the other sideline, Cade Klubnik, the freshman stud from Clemson, who forced DJ Uiagalelei into the transfer portal. Nailed that name, by the way. That was impressive. Forced him into the portal, benched in the ACC title game. Klubnik goes off. I mean, just goes off. I think you're looking at two potential stars of the future meeting up in this game. Sort of a welcoming to my era of college football sort of game, if you will, especially if one of these guys goes out and shines in this Orange Bowl. So a game that I'm very, very much looking forward to. And then another game that I'm looking forward to outside of the New Year's Six Bowl game is actually going to be this Notre Dame and South Carolina Gator Bowl. Like I just said, Spencer Rattler, he has an interesting story. He's already said he's going to play in this bowl game. Hasn't made a decision on the NFL draft. Basically, the guy didn't show up for the first 10 weeks of the season. The guy was just kind of like, I'll go out there. I'll play football for South Carolina. Nobody pays attention to the Gamecocks. We'll go a fun little 6-6, call it a day. We'll lose to the teams we're supposed to lose to, beat the teams we're supposed to beat, and call it a season. And then the Tennessee game happened. Then the Clemson game happened. And all of a sudden, Spencer Rattler's feeling good about himself. He's thinking, oh, maybe I just played myself back into the NFL. I've been this five-star. I was the hyped-up kid coming out. The guy out in the other USC, he's getting all the credit. He stole my job. This is a chance for him to show it against a powerhouse program in Notre Dame. And Notre Dame, another great turnaround story from where they started in the season, losing at home to Marshall and losing at home to Stanford. To beating, you know, Clemson's involved in all of this, man. What's their deal? But to beating Clemson later in the year, and finishing the season on a high note, and it's just a good story of redemption between those two teams. I think that's going to be a really fun game. I'm glad it sounds like most of the guys in that game are going to be playing, not opting out. So, very interested in seeing how that game goes as well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think my New Year's Six, obviously, I think. You know, with them being a local team and playing, you know, such a high-profile team, K-State versus Alabama is immediately one that jumps off the page. I'm actually pretty interested in the Utah-Penn State game, the Rose Bowl. I think that's going to be a pretty solid game. I mean, Penn State's only losses are to Michigan and Ohio State, and then Utah fresh off of an insane win against USC. They get the high-profile Pac-12 game. I think that's going to be pretty interesting. Because, I mean, USC, they do get a New Year's Six. I mean, they're playing Tulane. I mean, no disrespect to Tulane, but, like, man, you know, nobody care about that. Hey, USC, like, the Rose Bowl, that's freaking dope. A game where Utah played an insane game last season in the Rose Bowl. So we get to see them return, this time against Penn State. I'm all for it. I think that'll be an excellent game. Penn State's a really solid team. Just unfortunately, they're in the same division as two powerhouses. And Utah, champions of the Pac-12, come rolling in looking for some revenge. So against the Big Ten, so I think that's going to be a pretty interesting game. And another game that I will definitely be having my eyes on, as I really don't like either of these teams, but I'll definitely be watching the Liberty Bowl. And so. Listen here, it's Bower the Kansans, okay? The Kansas Jayhawks and the Arkansas Razorbacks. And the reason why my eyes are going to be all on this, because if you ask all these KU and Jayhawk fans, Missouri was, quote-unquote, dodging them in this bowl game. Meanwhile, Missouri has been saying that they did not want to play in the Liberty Bowl, regardless of who the opponent was, due to which I agree it's a stupid reason, but Mizzou plays Kentucky in basketball. On that same night, it's a very high-profile game, and they don't want to split the fan base. Still think that's a dumb reason why we're not going to have the border war. But that was the main – it wasn't about playing KU. They couldn't play on that day, which happened to be the day that the Liberty Bowl falls on. But I, since KU fans are all so hyped up and we're dodging this, I can't wait to watch them get absolutely shellacked by Arkansas, a team Missouri just beat, to then prove that they have no business even being on the same field as Mizzou in the first place. They can't even beat the team that Mizzou just handed an L to. So I will be definitely watching that. According to Connor, the loser of this game needs to be stripped of the word Kansas in the name. So we literally, according to Connor, we may see Arkansas just go to R. And then Kansas will be a team with no name if they lose. So I cannot wait for this. That'll be a high-profile game for our friend group. And I don't like either team playing. So, you know, but I'll definitely be a Razorback that day. Oh, yeah. I cannot wait. Because this is another classic move, especially when Connor's involved, of worrying about the opponent that you thought or that you wanted and not worrying about the team that's in front of you. And that's why Arkansas is going to storm into that game. Everybody wanted the Border War. We wanted Mizzou. And they're going to get absolutely destroyed. And realize they didn't want no part of that.
For those that don't know, he complained about an Ole Miss bowl game a few years ago because they were below 500. And then Ole Miss gave Indiana the work.
So, yeah, they're not. Ole Miss was not worthy of playing Indiana the bowl game. And then they lost.
Why did we get this sorry team?
And then they lost. And they lost by a decent amount.
Yeah, no, it really wasn't as close as even the final score indicated, if I remember right. But. Yeah, obviously going to be a lot of fun. I don't know when the last time, it would have to have been 08, the last time that all three of the local teams from Kansas City made it to a bowl game. So a lot of excited fan bases around here just to be playing in bowl games. Hopefully Kansas, for me, can get the job done against Arkansas because I don't want to see Alabama playing State Wildcats. Like, this is a made-up movie. In the Sugar Bowl, they have to lose the name Kansas from the university. It's what the Jayhawks did, but yeah, I am so pumped for bowl season, man. This has been for me a great college football season. For one of my teams, for Michigan, it's been a great college football season. I'm excited. I'll let you know right now. College football playoff. A lot of Michigan fans are going to say we want to play Ohio again. The thing is, we've got some unfinished business against Georgia. I don't know if anybody remembers the college football playoff game last year. I tried to drink myself out of remembering it right after it happened. But I remember it 34-11 last year in the playoff. So I will be cheering for Michigan and Georgia in that college football playoff. We've got unfinished business against them. I think we fare much better this year. So extremely excited for it. And then real quick, You got a pick for the Heisman as the finalists were announced?
Yeah, quickly. I mean, I'm going, you know, despite the Pac-12 championship game, Caleb Williams, I think he's been the best player throughout the season. It's been – no one's really ran away with it this year. And it's weird because it's like the best team or one of the best teams in Georgia, the quarterback. They really haven't had an offensive player. I won't even blame the quarterback. We're just an offensive player. That's like just been insane statistically. Stetson Bennett obviously has played great, but 20 touchdowns, 20 passing touchdowns, just 6 interceptions by no means is bad. It's just not like incredible compared to when you have C.J. Stroud from Ohio State with 37 touchdowns, Caleb Williams with 37 passing touchdowns, and even if you look at Stetson Bennett who had 7 rushing, you have Caleb Williams who ran for 10. So even in like the rushing department. You know, he's not even like a dual threat that's been doing it the best. So, in the end, I think it's Caleb Williams. I think that, you know, all the hype behind USC is back on top of that will, I think, eventually help him win it as well. But I think it's also deserving from an individual performance. But I also can see Stetson Bennett, I mean, being the quarterback on the team that's, quote-unquote, been the best throughout the season. I could see him getting a shot, but I think it's Caleb Williams to lose.
I'm in agreement, 100%. I think this is Caleb Williams' trophy. We've kind of been – Joe Burrow's season really made us lose sight of how impressive accounting for 47 touchdowns in a season is. We're, like, looking for reasons to not give it to Caleb Williams because of one bad game, really one bad half of a game. But he had Heisman moments, that win against UCLA, the win against Notre Dame to close out the year. Heisman moments, great numbers. And Oklahoma fans rejoice. Lincoln Riley just got another quarterback at Heisman, right? I will say, a little disappointed, Hendon Hooker and Blake Corum, both who finished the year injured, did not get to go to New York because I thought they were having great seasons. Better than a few of the guys up there. I'm not going to say names. CJ Stroud, I thought Blake Corum was better than him this year. And I thought Hendon Hooker was better than Stetson Bennett. But all in all, this is Caleb Williams' award. I expect him to be receiving the award. If he doesn't, huge upset. I hope some of my friends have money on these other guys if he doesn't, so they can, you know, take home a little bit of winnings after he gets robbed. So,
yeah. No, I think he's going to win it. And like I said, it you know, deserving over a large body of work over the season. So,
yeah. Heisman Trophy winner this year, first overall pick next year. Book it for Caleb Williams.
That is how it's looking. So we'll be here to tell you. We told you so. Very quickly, Toby, as this has been probably the longest episode we've done since we've been back for a while. Do you have any final thoughts?
Where's Aaron Judge headed to? Yeah, to the Yay area, the Bay area. Aaron Judge to the Giants. That was huge.
Not confirmed.
Look, baseball's hot stove. It's been hot right now.
He's a Yankee.
The Grom to the Rangers is weird as hell. I'll say that. But replacing DeGrom in New York with Justin Verlander from Houston, MVP, the former MVP Cody Bellinger on the move to the Cubs. My friend Connor complaining that the Cardinals haven't made any moves. Trey Turner going to the Phillies as if they needed more help in the lineup. It's been crazy. It's been fantastic. I've loved it so far. This is, it's not getting the notoriety that an NBA offseason will get, but there's been a lot of movement really early on in baseball. We don't see this very often. And this next baseball season is going to be pretty fun for me, not having to watch Aaron Judge hit absolute bombs in our very, very poorly lit stadium down in Tampa Bay. It'll be a lot more fun for me with him out in the Yay area. So,
yeah,
that's the final thought for me. Just had to throw that in there.
My final thought, maybe it is wild, is how wild all this news coverage is of OBJ, man. Like, you would have thought Jerry Rice has unretired or Calvin Johnson has come back. Like, listen, I understand. And I have no beef at all, really, with OBJ. I don't consider myself a huge fan, but I don't dislike the guy by any means. And I'm a fan of his game. Bro, dude gets so much media coverage for no reason, man. Like, even when we saw him before the ACL injury, dude was maybe a top 20 wide receiver, maybe. And that's pushing it. Like, dude, like, they're off the rails. And I'm not even just saying that because he may sign with the Cowboys, a team I don't like. Even if he goes to the Giants, like, dude, who cares, man? Like, I don't understand. He's not going to be just life-changing. Like, the Cowboys honestly don't need it. They statistically play better when they run the ball. So adding on another wide receiver to then try to force-feed the ball to is actually quite literally detrimental to their roster, and it's statistically proven. So I don't understand that. The Giants need wide receivers, but dude, OBJ is not changing life in either of those two places. So I'm just tired of hearing about it. I wish you would just go ahead and pick a team and be done with it. There was reports, I think yesterday, that said that the Cowboys, as much as excited they are about him, they're not even convinced he's fully healthy from his ACL injury. So it's just like, bro. And then you have to pay him on top of that. Like, this is just a dumb – I don't understand what, like, the media sensation is with OBJ. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's a high-profile guy who was once arguably the best wide receiver in football. And now pretty much any place he goes – I guess if he goes to the Giants, he probably would be the best. But he'd be the third-best wide receiver on his own team on the Cowboys. So, and quite honestly, the way Tony Pollard's playing – like, he'd probably be a fourth option. And they're tied in. He'd probably be like a fourth or fifth passing option. I don't understand the hype. So that's my final thought. I don't understand it. I wish he'd just pick a team and they'd shut up about it. And he probably won't even play even after he signed with the team for the first like two games that he's on their team. Dude is still recovering. So that's that. But that will wrap up this edition of the Sports Resort. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Obviously, lots of content in there, but we had to get you guys caught up on what's been going on in the World Cup, give a brief breakdown of the playoffs were to start today in the NFL. Obviously, some breaking news with my boys. So you would have me messed up if I weren't going to talk about my team on my podcast when we have some breaking news. So for all you Titans people who are not Titans fans, you'll have to excuse me. And then I had to wrap up with some college football, which we haven't talked a whole lot about on here, but we definitely had to get you guys caught up and get you guys some of our reactions, as now the college football playoff is set and we know who our bowl game opponents are. So we will be back at it. We will see if we have another episode later on this week. If not, we will for sure be back next week to highlight what's going on in the World Cup. At that point, we'll know who's in the semis, and that'll be pretty exciting. And bowl game play is just right around the corner, and get a whole nother week of NFL football. So no complaints from me. But with that said, you guys take it easy for the rest of the week. Have a safe weekend, and you guys have a great one.